Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast. This is your host, Rachel Jamison. Today I have with me Mike and Lacey Dixon of the Fit Farmer YouTube channel, and I'm sure you have other channels. Why don't you introduce yourself and tell the audience how you became a homesteader, how you guys became homesteaders, and maybe it'll be different for each of you. My husband and I's story is very different from each other's, so go ahead and tell us.
All right. Our story is kind of somewhat intertwined, but I kind of start way back when I was a kid. I had no homesteading, farming experience at all. Didn't know where my food came from, really. I was just a suburban city kid growing up, mostly in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I was really interested in weightlifting and sports, and really wanted to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger when I was a kid. So that was my goal there for a while. And that is what led me to getting more interested in and taking care of my body and health. Because growing up, we were on the sad American diet where I was eating Pop-Tarts every day, multiple Pop-Tarts every day. Frosted Flakes, I would add sugar to my Frosted Flakes, even though they had sugar already on Frosted Flakes. And Kool-Aid, we were crazy with Kool-Aid. We just had kid cuisines, just a lot of junk food, And not knowing until years later when I started getting into bodybuilding and learning that to be successful in bodybuilding, that it goes beyond just lifting weights, that you actually got to have a diet to go with it. If you're going to go and step on stage and compete, because that was one of my goals, was to be a competitive bodybuilder. And the diet that they put me on was an eating clean diet, which got rid of all those processed foods, all the Pop-Tarts and junk. And then as I was on that diet, one of the things that I started noticing was that I was able to breathe out of both nostrils. I remember going through earlier in life not being able to breathe out of both nostrils at the same time. And I remember we were, dating at the time. And I remember asking you, I was like, is it normal to go through most of your life only breathing out of one nostril at a time? And you were like,
no, that's weird.
But cleaning up my diet to me, it was like, wow, yeah, having a different diet can have a lot of different effects on your body, not just looking better, but also feeling better. So when I cleaned up the diet and was able to get on stage and compete, and was able to compete for a number of years, and you helped me through that a lot. I still remember you in the morning times getting out of the grill at our apartment, cooking up chicken breast for me to help me out. Yeah. You remember that?
7 o'clock in the morning, I'm out there grilling out chicken.
Yeah, because I would eat chicken breast like 6-7 times a day at that time. And it was just part of the thing. And then as we were both into health and wellness at that time, and we were both working out at the gym together. And I still remember I went through so many different workout partners, but you were the only one that was consistent that I could count on to be there with me. I remember some of the weights that I was bench pressing, and people were like, is she going to be able to spot you? And I'm like, yeah, she's got it. I think it was 455 one time you were spotting me. I was like, I know pretty much what I can do. And we're right there together, and she's right there with me. Yeah. So that's pretty neat. But all through that time, we both just started working on our diet, eating better. We went from eating natural to realizing that natural really isn't anything, and then eating more organic food. And then we got married and got our first house together and wanted to have our first garden together. And we were like, one of the best ways to know that we're eating good food and food that's good for you without herbicides, pesticides, and GMOs and all that stuff, is to actually, start growing something yourself. And for me, I had never grown food before, and I was really excited about that. But she did have a little bit more of a background, somewhat more connected, a lot more connected than I was with food, growing food.
Yeah. So I grew up right next to my grandparents. That they were Depression babies. And my grandfather always had a big garden. And, you know, we had fig trees and blueberry bushes. And, you know, we would go and pick honeysuckle and, you know, all these different things that I just grew up doing. And we canned. And, you know, before I could go play in the summertime, I'd have to string a whole 5-gallon bucket of green beans. That was just something that I grew up with that, you know, that you didn't grow up with. But as I got older, I met Mike right after I graduated massage school. So we were both in like the health industry. And that's when I started, you know, learning about like toxic stuff and everything, and especially food. And like you said, we were both, you know, gym rats for a long time. And so when we were looking for a house, that's one thing that I said that I wanted. I was like, I want space to grow food because I miss the tomatoes and cucumbers and everything that we used to grow. So it was neat that we were both on the same page there.
Yeah. And then we started having growing babies at the same time. And then we became even more serious about our food and wanted to make sure that we were providing our kids with good food. And we're living there in the city. It got to the point where we were realizing that where we were at was not suitable to our goals. Our goals and dreams and aspirations had outgrew where we were. We were doing what we could to grow food in that small city homestead plot. But we lived in a road that wasn't super busy, but it was still busy enough that there was traffic through there. And we're like, we don't want our kids getting run over. We want to be able to go out and play. And then there's like, we want to do more. And the straw that really broke the camel's back for me, and I remember, was since I was into bodybuilding and protein, I was like, I want to start raising my own eggs. And start having some chickens, but the city ordinances wouldn't allow us to do it. And we knew that we had neighbors that were just, they would probably definitely rat on us. So we're like, it's just time to just get out of here. It's just time to move on, to sell everything and start homesteading somewhere else. And at the time, there's a shoestring budget diet or shoestring budget. And then there's the thinner than that is what we were on. The non-existent budget. So for us to be able to make the change, which we both felt like we were being called to make that change at the time, we just had to figure out how to make it happen. So we ended up selling our house and pretty much everything that we owned. We sold our second car.
Yeah.
We even sold your ring.
My engagement ring,
which we don't share that a lot with people. Wow. But there was a lot of sacrifices that we had to make to be able to do that. And that is what allowed us to be able to buy a used yurt off Craigslist. Because that was the yurt has been the vehicle that has allowed us to be able to have this way of life. We weren't able to go out and just get a loan and get a brand new house with this bunch of acreage. But we were able to move out onto some family property that had been in your family. I'll let you explain that.
Yeah. So it's still my dad's property. We live on his property. But there was already my grandparents used to live here, and there's already a well and a septic system. So that was another, you know, huge thing for us that we could. And I asked my dad, I was like, hey, Dad, what do you think about us buying a yurt and tearing down the old house and setting it up on your property? And he's like, okay. So that was another aspect of that.
Yeah.
And
he doesn't live here on this property, but he's used part of this property for years as for his construction business. Yeah. So one of the things that I encourage people on that with, and they're like, oh, that must be nice that somebody, they got land that you can use. You never know. Ask some family members that aren't using land if you can farm or grow food on it. Ask people in your neighborhood. Ask friends. Just reach out to people. You never know who might be. You can work out some kind of trade barter system for using the land, or a lease, or whatever. Right. If you don't have the money to just go out, which most people don't, just buy a piece of property. Just be resourceful and reach out and connect with people. You never know. You never know.
And you don't necessarily have to live there.
Yeah.
Because we had chickens here before we ever lived here. And, you know, it can improve other people's property too, having the animals back on the land. So you can show them how you're going to improve it as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, there's quite a few, I think it's called spin farming.
Yes,
there's people out there that just farm other people's yards, give the people a portion of it and then they take the rest of it to market. I'm sure you could find somebody that would be willing to do that. And then you just take the rest of it home. Yeah.
There's a lot of people that are older and they don't want to see the property that they grew up with on. Maybe they had a farm on it, which is one of the cases nearby to us, that they don't want to see it turn into some place with tract homes or something like that, or some kind of development. They want to see people actually using it the way that they grew up it being used or something. So reach out to some of those people. You never know what could happen.
And it can be a tax break for them too.
Yep.
Because that's true.
As farmland, your taxes go down and then they can lease it out for the tax amount and then they can keep the land and maybe even, you know, somebody else use it.
Yeah.
Yeah, very true. Now, you guys are still in North Carolina?
Yes.
Okay. I wanted to clarify that. How many acres do you have access
to? Property, the immediate property that we're on now is 10 acres. We use, wouldn't even know how to divide it because on a good chunk of the other side of the property is where her father still operates his masonry construction business. Yeah. But then I guess on the other half or 65-70% is what we are using to operate on.
I mean, okay. Really, we probably only have animals and stuff on a little over 3 acres.
Yeah.
And the pond that we have is an acre. So,
and then a lot of it's wooded too, we're gradually been clearing to make more youthful pasture and areas of productivity.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we also have another across the road from us, another property that's not ours, but that we have an agreement where we're using that to raise. It is pasture to raise turkeys, chickens, and things like that.
Okay, so that was my next question. What is it that you are raising? What do you have on your farm, animals wise, and children? You guys have, is it four?
We have four. Four. Yeah.
Yeah.
And as far as animals that we're raising, we have chickens that we raise for eggs and meat. We have ducks that we raise for eggs and meat. We're also raising goats and we have a dairy cow.
We have turkeys. And geese.
What are you using the goats for?
We use the goats multi-purpose. We originally got them for milk, but we also use them to help manage the property. We're huge into figuring out ways that we can work. I call them co-workers also at the same time. I know we eat our co-workers sometimes, but it's a little weird. But they also work with us in managing the land.
There's a book there somewhere, How to Eat Your Co-Worker. By goats. So it sounds like you guys, like, you're using everything to the maximum, and that's like super cool. So you said that you're living in a yurt. Is that, how big is that yurt, and are you all in that now? I kind of know the answer to this question from watching your YouTube channel, but you can tell the audience.
Yeah, we have all lived here. We've added since we've been here. I think we started off with,
there were only four of us.
Yeah, four of us. So we've added two during our time here, and we've been here not quite 10 years, but somewhere around there now. 10 years. And our plan is to add on an additional yurt that we've already purchased, as well as another building. I don't know what we call that yet.
It's just like a building to attach
an add on.
But as of right now, what we bought off of Craigslist was a 30-foot diameter Pacific yurt.
Yeah.
It's just right over 700 square feet. Okay. So we have lived here. In a couple of months, it'll be 10 years that we've been in here.
Yep. And some people wonder what type of layout that we have. We do have walls. We do have running water. We do have lights in here. And with yurts, you can go as primitive as you want, or you can go as luxurious as you want. I feel like maybe we're somewhere in the middle there.
Yeah, somewhere in the between.
Because we definitely wanted to have a shower with running water. And we also wanted to have our own bedroom to have our space with. And then the kids have triple bunk beds that they're on, have been living in for the time being. But our goal is to eventually turn this current yurt that we're in into just bedroom spaces and move the kitchen and dining out into our new yurt. So it will be more appropriate, more suitable, more functional for being hospitable and having others in, as well as doing with all the different things that we have going on here with the market garden and cannon and all these different things, to be able to have a better space. for handling and more suited to doing those.
That's things. A really tight space for six people.
Yeah.
And I know how much room all of my canning and all that junk takes up. And so I can't imagine. Are you processing your own animals, or are you sending those to the butcher? So you're doing all that too within that space. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. We process our own animals. We have a processing station that's right outside of our whale house building that we poured concrete, and we have our plucker or scalder system there with stainless steel tables. We definitely couldn't do that inside. And then on the other side of that is where we have another area that we call our wash and pack station. And that's where we'll handle our vegetables that we'll bring in from the market garden to wash those and package those.
So do you have another building where you have like your freezers and stuff?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah. 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 And that's right alongside there with the wash and pack station.
Okay. Perfect. Perfect. Are either of you working off the homestead, or is the homestead all of your money that you're making right now is off the homestead?
Yes, we're both full-time work from the homestead.
Okay.
Trying to remember how many years ago now that's been. Before that, when we started, let's just kind of, I guess, rewind a little bit. So when we started the homesteading journey, I worked full-time off the homestead.
Okay.
As a personal trainer, nutritional coach. And I also had an additional job that I had just to continue to try to bring money in. And I was working side jobs, like little demo jobs, just to kind of keep income things flowing, as well as selling some of the eggs that we had.
It was tight. We were working hard.
So that was a tough time. It's definitely can be a tough time when you're getting started.
It sounds like you guys were pretty young when you met too.
Yeah, we met when we were 1920.
Yeah.
Then we got,
I just turned 21.
And we got married 25-ish?
Yeah.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that it doesn't always happen the same way, but when you meet when you're young, it seems like you learn to bootstrap pretty quick.
Yeah, but you don't have anything.
Totally
you
agree.
Gotta figure out how to make it work.
Yeah. I also think that is also, it's very, very difficult. But I think it's beneficial for your relationship.
Yeah.
Because going through tough times together helps you to grow. Yes, there are tough times where you still are having your things that you're working through individually. We're all human beings. We have weaknesses and things like that. But it helps us to grow, helps us to figure things out. It helps us to know, especially on the other end, realizing that you worked through those hard things and you're looking back and you're like, we got through that together. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I know it is. I feel like that now after 30 plus years of marriage and longer with being with my husband, I do feel like that. It's like, man, look at what we did. Look at what we did. This is cool. We did this. Yeah. It's really cool. Yeah.
It's amazing to say that didn't break us. It was close, but it didn't break us.
Yes. Yes. That's really, I appreciate you guys coming from that. I don't know, that bootstrap. And I know it was hard when you went through it. And I'm not saying it wasn't. I actually listened to a podcast of you and the Rhodes talking about just how rough it was. And I grew up in poverty. So I just can appreciate coming from that situation where you really are struggling. And then, of course, I got married young and we really struggled when we first got married, and actually for a long time after that. But I just appreciate that, because I think there's a lot of people in that situation and they feel like maybe they can't do what you're doing. And you've shown, you know, you can. You went and you found land that you can use. You've sold everything and you have this yurt that you're living in, and you're both smiling and laughing and enjoying every minute of it. And I love that. I love giving people hope. And to me, that's just, like, we could end the podcast right now, but I don't want to because I have more questions.
You're right about it being tough. And it's one of those things. I, looking back, it's one of those things. I know just for me, I personally needed it. It's one of those things. Going through those hard things, it humbles you. Mm-hmm. And it has taught me to better relate to other people who have gone through hard times, to kind of have more sympathy towards them. And I think for a brief period of time when we were we were eating organic, and it almost became somewhat of an elitist type attitude. And then going through a time where you're like struggling and you're just putting food on the table in general is tough. It humbles you to like, oh, wow. Maybe not everybody can afford pasture raised eggs every day, or pasture raised chicken, or whatever. Free range beef. Maybe they can't afford it. Maybe we just need to find out how to help them in the best way that we can.
Yeah, because I remember we grew mustard greens one time, and I don't even want to ever eat mustard greens ever again, because we didn't have anything, and I had to figure out how to eat mustard greens for, you know, us and the kids, because it was really like, we didn't have any money. I remember having like $20 to go to the grocery store for the week, and, you know, cheap ground turkey.
Yeah.
I can't eat anymore. I mean, if I really had to, I could, but just the thought of eating that and mustard green, it scarred me for life.
Yeah.
But that's the reality, is like, you do what you have to do, and that's what you do.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've told people that.
No, that was definitely tough, because at that time, actually, I should say this. A lot of times we were there, a lot of people are coming into homesteading. You oftentimes over romanticize what it's going to be like. Mm-hmm. And you think that you don't see the budget troubles. You don't see the animal deaths. You don't see the learning curve. There's so much you just don't see.
That's so.
And true. I just remember being in that time, that tough time, that I was working like crazy, and we didn't have money. So it's like, I didn't have time or money. So it's like, that's a tough place to be.
But
gradually things got better. We were able to, you start learning how to do things better. At that time, I was able to go from working full time off the homestead, and having extra jobs, to gradually be able to stop having to do those extra jobs, not having to do the odd end jobs, to just working on full time off the farmstead. And then gradually I was able to go to part time away from the farmstead, and then ultimately full time working from the farmstead. And we were able to do that. The market, figuring out, narrowing our focus and figuring out for us, market gardening was one of the main things that helped us for me to be able to leave my full time off the farm job.
So are you doing market gardening still?
We still do it to a degree, but nowhere near like before, just because from some of the other business aspects of our business with content creation and everything, other things that has our revenue has gone up, and that has become a bigger part of our revenue. But we still do sell produce, CSA, and small grocery store and things like that.
What made you decide to start the vlogging journey on YouTube? And did you have any background doing any of that? Or was this just all, I got to learn this and figure it out?
Years ago, when I was in, when I told you I was interested in wanting to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger, I actually wanted to be in movies and stuff one day too. I was like, I just want to be just like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I was even learning about filmmaking. I was also inspired by Star Wars and loved George Lucas. It's like, I want to be a director like him. And so, and then as life went on, and I was in the fitness industry and focusing on my career and bodybuilding and that, and then got into homesteading, I actually probably never thought that I would be coming back to actually being interested in filming. So when we started the vlog, it became more of something just to kind of journal our life. We were inspired by Justin Rhodes, who was also making, we actually met Justin Rhodes before he started YouTube. So that was interesting.
Okay.
We got to meet him before. We know each other prior to YouTube, which is kind of neat.
Yeah.
So we started just creating a vlog on there. And then we saw Justin Rhodes being successful in it. And as I started doing it and having that desire to want to fulfill that desire of making movies and creating things, it kind of fit that itch that I had or whatever. So Justin has been a big mentor of mine to help me and kind of encourage me to continue to create content and learning that could be a revenue stream. And then things just started growing more and has become a major focus on what we have done. And a big continuing drive to do that because there's been tough times that we will have wanting to quit on the homestead as well as on YouTube. Right. But when we receive comments from people who say things like, thank you so much. I've started my first garden because of you. Those are just like, wow, I can't quit. We're actually helping people. That's so cool.
That is cool.
Aspect of that is, you know, we were doing the market gardening and doing the vlog and doing, you know, all these other things. And we were like almost killing ourselves doing it all. And we really had to think about, you know, where are we making the biggest impact? And it was the comments about, you know, we started our garden because of you. You know, there's lots of other producers out there of food, but there wasn't a lot of producers of content on how to do those things whenever we started. So whenever our channel started doing better, like we really had to make decisions on, are we going to like ramp up the market garden or are we going to ramp up teaching people how to do these things for themselves? Okay. And I think that's one area why we cut back on a market garden, because we just could not physically do everything ourselves.
And that's a business lesson too there. When you see where the revenue is coming more efficiently and naturally, to maybe shift your focus onto that, because there's going to be some things that your heart's tied in, but maybe it's not being as profitable and the best suited to serve your family or you and your household. So those are things to keep in mind as you're assessing some of those things, and or even your own personal health or whatever.
And that's good advice for the whole homestead. You know, you may really love goats, but if they're sucking all your money and they're not providing anything, you need to figure out, you know, what's got to go, what's got to stay, and what makes your money.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right. For sure. So you guys, so now that you, man, I could ask so many questions, but I wanted to ask this because I see it get asked a lot, is how are you handling things like insurance with both of you home on the homestead? And maybe you just are trusting that that's going to work out, but how are you handling like health insurance without a job providing that?
So I have never had insurance up until like, it's been 2 years. It's been almost 2 years. So we came across something called Share Healthcare. Mm-hmm. And it is, you know, it's not insurance,
right?
But it helps defray costs and everything. And I think we, as a family, pay, is it $400 a month?
I think it's $450 or something now.
I think it's $450 since Hezekiah was born.
Is that the name of the one that you're using? Is called Share? Yeah. I know there's many out there. My mom never has had insurance, and she had Samaritan's Ministries for years and years. Yep.
And so. They, like if you are a member for, I think more than like 3 months, they take care of like pregnancy. Okay. They take care of all of these different things up to, you know, depending on what you pay every month. Ours, it's $1,000. We have to pay $1,000 per incident. And then whatever it is after that, they pick up.
Yeah. And they're a Judeo-Christian healthcare ministry.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a growing number of them, which is wonderful because they actually work really well. Like I said, my mom had one for years and she never had any issues with it and she really liked it.
And I'll say, and for $450 for a family of six, that is way cheaper. Like I never could afford health insurance before, even being a healthy person. I just didn't have the extra every month to gamble with. You know, I'm not getting anything back and maybe I'll get sick. Maybe I won't. And even if I did, it may not even be covered.
Right. So when switching gears and talking a little bit about the kids, how old is your oldest and how old is your youngest? And do they play a really big role in, I know the answer to this because all homesteaders have their kids helping, but do they play a huge role in this? And how do they feel as they're growing older about your presence on YouTube?
Great questions. I'd start off with our daughter. She is 13 years old. She'll be 14. And our youngest is just turned 1 year old. We got a little gap between there. But they are absolutely essential to the success of the farmstead. One of the things that I learned during the tough times of learning the homestead thing was I was trying to do too much on my own. A lot of times I see this happen with parents is just like, it could be done better and faster if I just do it myself. And that's the wrong attitude to have. Not only will that negatively affect you as far as burnout and so many other things, it is also hinders your children and those around you from growing and developing. And it will also hinder the overall success of whatever operation, home, whatever you have, because the more people who are growing and learning and improving, the more the overall structure and the system can improve, whatever you have, your home, organization, whatever. So once I started realizing I need to delegate and teach them how to do it too, it also teaches them responsibility, helps them to develop a good work ethic. That's one of the major things that I feel like we as parents are supposed to help our children to learn, and that is to have a good work ethic, to learn how to be responsible, to learn how to take care of an animal, or and say they're taking care of just the ducks or a flock of ducks, and they're responsible for that. And if something happens because if they neglected it, it's their fault, and they need to learn to be able to take responsibility for it, that not to help buy into the victim mentality that, right, you didn't do what you were supposed to do. So the constant, this is what happened. That's life. That lesson can be applied in all types of areas of life. So that's something that we try to instill in them, that they are participating and everybody has their area that they're responsible for, because it contributes to the overall success of the family. Do you want to add to that before we answer the YouTube part?
Well, I was going to do the YouTube part, but yeah, no, that's the truth. Like, that's what we're trying to instill in them. And, you know, and they're just kids. Yeah. They're not perfect. Yeah. They buck the system all the time, just like we did when we were kids.
And we still do it as adults sometimes.
Why do I have to do this? I don't want to do this. And I'm like, well, sometimes you just have to do the things that you don't want to do. And I want you to learn that right now. Because it'll be profitable to you as an adult just to know that you're just going to have to do things that you don't want to do.
And that's part of training and development and character growth, is realizing to get out of yourself. Life's not all about me and what I want to do and what feels good to me. That ultimately our lives are to serve and help one another. That's when it works. Like, the way of giving, really the only way of live. Everybody's giving, it works out. Everybody can also receive. But if everybody's just trying to take, it doesn't work. It's not sustainable. So that's the, and you see those things played out really with this way of life, with an agrarian homesteading way of life, which I think ideally we're more designed to live. There's so many lessons out here.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's such a great life to raise a family in.
Yeah.
For a reason. Sure. Yeah.
And along the way, as we're working with the children, as they're learning, we're also learning. We're learning patience and forgiveness and all those things as well, long suffering.
Oh, yeah.
To answer the other part of your question about YouTube, Sayla used to want to be in the videos a lot more and was on with you a lot more, but as she's gotten older, she doesn't necessarily want to always be in the video, but she will when we ask her to do certain things. Whenever we're showing people how to do something, she'll be on there, and we don't force them to be on there. But we also don't show anything that is degrading of them,
embarrassing.
And people ask, they're like, your kids always do their chores and they always do this, and I was like, no, they don't always do that. Like, well, you need to show that other stuff. And I said, no, we don't. I said, because I don't want anyone showing me at my worst to the world. Why would we do that to our children?
And my goal, and since I'm the main one that runs my channel, is if anybody's going to be embarrassed, it's going to be me. I'll put myself up in a goofy way or show my bad side, but I don't show them.
Yeah.
Unless it's okay with them.
Unless it's okay with them. Yeah. Because Josiah did not want anything to do with the YouTube channel, which is why he wasn't in a lot of videos early on. But now he's coming around and he actually wants, he talks in the video. And then Sayla wanted to be in it, and now she does it, but she is great. She's very artistic. She has the eye. She helps out with the majority of my thumbnails, and she just sees it. She captures pictures. She actually submits pictures to Murray McMurray Hatchery.
It's in their catalog.
That's just her thing. I was like,
that's great. You
keep working on that. That's a talent there. Keep working on that. So with this way of life, that's another thing that you spend so much time together. I say you share life together, you work together, and you can also play together. But you also have an opportunity to spend a lot more time together. That way you're able to see different strengths and talents and abilities and even weaknesses in the children and help them to be able to work on it together.
Yeah, when you spend that much time together, you really, really know each other. So are the kids, I didn't ask this, are they homeschooled then?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I wondered. We homeschooled our kids too. And you spend a lot of time together. You really get to know each other.
Yeah. We eat 2 to 3 meals together each day. We spend 99% of each hour of the day with each other. We spend a lot of time together. But we're very, very blessed and thankful that God's allowed us to be able to live this life and to grow more connected to each other. I remember working in off the farmstead as a personal trainer and being away from the home 12 to 14 hours a day and just coming home exhausted, realizing that I wasn't giving my family my best. I gave everybody else my best, and then I just don't have anything left to give at the end of the day. And a lot of people just come home and veg out because that's really all the energy that they have. And I just don't think I'm not beating anybody up who has to work off the farm or has worked many hours. You have to figure out and work through those things. But at some point, sometimes career changes do need to be made, and we need to look at what's best for our family overall. And we may have to make sacrifices, make pay cuts, cut out a lot of those streaming subscriptions and things like that to live a life more connected. Because ultimately, we need to look at the purpose of life anyways. And it's not rising in our careers or whatever. Our families are extremely important part of the purpose of life. And we should keep that in mind in all the different decisions that we make.
Right. I agree. Do you guys have any regrets or not when I say regrets, that's the wrong word. Do you have anything you wouldn't do again?
Like, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
I ask myself that a lot throughout the years. And sometimes when I ask it as the way you originally asked it, what do I regret or look back on or done differently? If I was in this, if I had my knowledge and experience now and I would go back to then, yes, there's things that I would do differently. But if I did it differently, it would have made me who I am today. So there's a lot of the things that I could say that I'd go back and change. But then in a sense, I wouldn't, because even from the hard decisions, the bad decisions, I still learned and it shaped me who I am today. And I can explain to take some example of something as small as a mistake you've made in seed starting or growing microgreens. Well, I can explain to Selah that I screwed that up. Don't do it like that. So my answer to that would be I really don't. I really don't. What about you?
I think so. I don't think that we could have done anything different, really.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I think what we tried to make the best decisions like in that moment that we could.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I can't think of anything.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Do you think that your kids are going to follow in your footsteps? Do you think they're enjoying the homestead experience enough to maybe follow in that?
I ask myself that question too. We've talked about it before. I can't say for sure. I can see where some of them have a more natural desire to it than others. But then all of them, I have trouble picturing them living in the city and doing different things. It's just like, I don't know if you could do that. I think you could because you've learned so much, but it seems like it might drive you crazy.
But it's nice whenever they talk about, you know, whenever I have my farm one day.
Yes, they do say that.
That's nice to hear. But I mean, I could see a couple of them maybe not having as much as we have. Maybe they would be a little more happy with just some chickens in the backyard and everything and not go like as full scale as we have.
Yeah. But our goal is not to force them. I want them,
One of the things that I keep in mind is I want them to make this way of life as fun as possible. So it's important for us to make time to go on vacations, do fun stuff, because I've seen where farms, say the grandfather was the farmer, and that's all that he had his son do was just farm, never left the farm. And they grew up hating it, the farm. And then as they got older and the job, they wanted nothing to do with the farm. I don't want that to be with our kids. I want them to realize to have a balanced life that, yes, we work and we earn the right to play, but we need to have times where we just get away and do fun stuff. That's so important.
I think that's where a lot of homesteaders make the mistake of tying themselves so hard to their property that they can't leave. Because I saw somebody, I asked a question about if we had an event somewhere, you know, would you rather it be 1 day or 2 day? And somebody responded with like, I can't be away from my home for more than 1 day. And I'm like, that's a problem.
It sure is.
That's a problem if you don't have some systems in place, or you don't have a friend that you can call or train somebody that can come and work on your homestead. Because like Mike said, like, your kids are going to grow up and hate that they can't ever leave. They can't go do anything.
Yeah.
And
I don't want them to feel like slaves. No.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes they already do, but
we kid about that one.
My husband actually grew up on a small homestead, and he actually got really burned out because they never did any, that's what they did. They never did anything. So he never wanted anything to do with it for a long time. Yeah. Totally. And now, of course, he wants to. And that's still one of his things. We are going to be able to leave, right?
Yeah.
That's like still his question. We are still going to be able to leave. And I'm like, that's why we're building systems.
Yeah, that's very important. I also remember I did a video one time where we did go away. I don't remember if it was for a Christian camp or something, but I remember somebody like saying, well, I've built this homestead and to where I don't need to take a vacation. But I'm like, well, maybe that's true with you, but you got to think about other people in your family. Maybe they need to get away. Ultimately, we all need to get away from time to time, even if it's just for a weekend. But we also need to be considerate of the people around us that, hey, maybe they need a different environment to connect with you on and have fun and just hang out together. So those are important things to keep in mind.
So how do you guys find it easy to find somebody to watch your farm when you leave?
Let's see, over the years, well, at first, to me, it was like, I need to figure out systems where if for whatever reason we got sick or she's having a baby, we need to just get away for a couple of days, that we could do that with us. Our operation being a little smaller, a little more focused on the market garden, we were able to do that without having to help. But we realized, well, we need to start getting help once we started adding things like goats and then now a dairy cow. So now we have friends and some people that help us out with. So I do encourage that, especially some people may live in the city and want to have that fix of homesteading without actually homesteading. So maybe you can provide them that opportunity. Say, hey, we're going out of town. We teach you how to milk or whatever. And you can just watch over our place and figure out some kind of system or barter system, trade with that or pay them or whatever. Just any ways to make that happen, you can do that. And then may also have another homestead or farm down the road that maybe they want to get away too, and you guys can just say, hey, you're going out for 4th of July, I'll cover you then, I'm going away right before school, and figure out something like that.
That whole community thing becomes really big.
Yeah, that's cool. It does.
Do you guys have a lot of homesteaders in your area?
A lot. Let's see here. We have some farms, and then we have some people who are homesteading to some degree. But what were we going to say?
I mean, I don't think we know a lot of people right around here that do. But, I mean, we do have some friends that can come take care of chickens and do things like that. Now, our friend that milks the cow, she's milked animals before. Mm-hmm. And they live in town, but they used to have a homestead where they were in Missouri.
Yeah.
So, but she still craves that. Like, I want to go and do stuff and, you know, plant in the garden and things like that. So she'll come over And she milks for us 2 days a week. And then if we go out of town, she's like, sure, I'll come milk. And that has been a huge relief.
That's amazing.
Yes, it's been fantastic. But and other times we've had even teenagers come and learn how to do stuff in the market garden and teach them and take care of chickens and things like that. So they kind of have grown up a little bit like that.
Yeah.
So you guys kind of talked about future plans with adding a yurt. Is there any other future plans that you wanted to, that you have in your head that are coming soon?
There's all kinds of little refinements and additions. Yeah, where I'm working on some, I've been getting more and more into heritage breeds and breeding some of our animals, just in case, you never know, if you hatcheries and things like that.
Right. Yeah.
Couldn't get them from that. So we're working on improving some of our duck systems and building some permanent duck systems. We're trying to figure out how to increase production more and more, better utilize the pasture that we're working on, we're leasing across the road from us. And then you got the yurt thing. There's so many different things. And then also we're building, our own member area. So that way we can provide, exclusive content, to help people learn to live a more homegrown lifestyle and improving their family, improving what the food and things that they're growing. And let's see what else we got going on. We're also planning to do our own conference in the fall. We got a lot going on.
You guys got a lot going on. Now, is all this on a website then?
Yes. It's not quite finished yet as far as the member area, but it's, I'm not sure if you can provide it, but we're doing a wait list for our member area for those who are interested in that. And it's been worked on right now.
Yeah, we're going to, when people hear this, we also have a website that will put all your links and everything on. So we can add that where the podcast is. And then people can go to the website and find all of your links so they can find you and look up maybe your conference and want to go.
Fantastic. Yeah, we'll be happy to provide the links for that. And the fitfarmer.com will be where the...
It'll be live by then. Should be.
Yeah.
Wow. Big, that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Yeah.
Hard to keep it straight sometimes from day to day or from moment to moment.
So one of the reasons I wanted to have you on here was not just for the interview, but was also because you're the fit farmer. So I was going to ask you if you had any tips for maybe getting and staying in shape on the homestead. And then, because I feel like that's just a huge part of the homestead. If you're not healthy and you're not fit, it's definitely harder to be a homesteader, but you're also more prone to injury. You know, we're all hauling wheelbarrows and everything else around.
Yeah.
So do you have any tips you want to share with us about getting fit and staying fit?
I totally do. I totally do. And my tips kind of come more as principles than they do it. Specific workout routines, which some people are looking for, but be intentional about getting your physical activity in on a regular basis. We live a life that's physically active, yes, but a lot of times we naturally or whatever try to gravitate towards shortcuts or using machines to do all of our work for us. And I'm not saying you can never use a tractor or whatever, but say you're working on a tractor or some piece of machine for the day, a certain period of time where say you're using a backhoe to scoop up mulch and move it. Maybe you take a couple yards and you just shovel it by hand instead of trying to do the whole job with the tractor. If you do that, there's no need for you to have to go to a gym because you didn't get your exercise in. Shoveling a couple yards of mulch, you're going to get a workout. You're going to get a forearm workout, your core. And if you move fast enough, you get some cardio in too.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But also in the garden, you could be broad forking. You could also be squatting as you're putting your transplants in. Figure out ways to implement physical activity, movement in your day-to-day life. I'm not saying it's bad to go to the gym, but the gym's not for everybody, and you don't have to go to the gym to get fit. Actually, when societies were more agrarian, there was no need for Gold's Gym and all these other things because people were physically active and doing the things that they needed to do. They were, yep, hauling firewood, moving bales of hay, shoveling, doing all, carrying buckets of water or whatever else. Their life was a fitness routine. They worked out at Earth Gym.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then you combine that with the great food that you're growing.
Exactly. Exactly. And that would be another part of is your nutrition. As much as you can, cut out the processed food, the fake ingredients, the sugar-laden foods, cut those out and eat real foods. And then your body will naturally start getting, for the most part, as long as you don't have any underlying issues, will get rid of the bloating. It will get rid of retaining water. And if you're getting that physical activity in there, you'll find your ideal size. I'm not stuck on BMI. I'm not a huge fan of BMI. If you look at anything, maybe body fat. But each of us have our own best body. And if we're doing it the best that we can to take care of that, we should achieve it.
Those are some great tips. Did you have any to add to that, Lacey? I saw you start to think. I mean, as a massage therapist, you probably helped people that had pain issues and stuff. So,
yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, and like doing proper lifting, but taking care of yourself too. And I was going to talk about like the mobility aspect of everything, because you could be strong and not very mobile. So you need to be able to move.
Yeah.
And that's another aspect. Maybe you're a little heavier, but you can move and you don't feel bad. You don't hurt.
Yep.
Like there's so many things. Our society has made it look like you need to look exactly like this,
right,
to be healthy. And that's not exactly right. You need to find out what your body feels best at when you can move without pain and function. Those are like the big things in my book. I want to be able to keep up with my kids and be really flexible and mobility work.
Yeah, most of us should be able to go down to the floor and get back up off the floor without some type of assistance. So if you can't do some of those things, start working on things like that as well. If you're really not physically active much at all right now, just start by walking and just figuring out how to become more mobile, making sure that you can reach over your head and working on movements like that. Don't worry about necessarily the lifting weight aspect of it, unless you're further on down along the line and more fit, physically fit and advanced. But other than that, just work on movements and figuring out how you can be better in your day-to-day life of moving around and doing things, how you can be more efficient at carrying those bales of hay or splitting that wood, things like that. And then there are times, you mentioned injuries. They do happen. I get injured from time to time. I got injured in bodybuilding, football, here on the farmstead. Those things do happen. And then figure out what works for you as far as self-care and getting yourself back going again, because we do need, this lifestyle is physically demanding. So we do need to make sure that we're fit enough to be able to handle this lifestyle. And if you need to, I do this from time to time, acupuncture, we'll go to acupuncture, chiropractor, massage guns, TENS unit, whatever you need to do, therapies, remedies, whatever, those things do happen. It's just a part of this natural life that we live. We're going to have some bangs and, bruises here and there.
Right. Well, those are all perfect. And I really appreciate you guys sharing that. Is there anything else that you would like to add before we end? We're obviously going to leave links in the show in the show notes for everybody to go find you guys.
I just want to encourage everybody that you can do it, whether you may be having a tough time in your family, a tough time on your homestead, tough time financially, whatever, just hang in there. One of the things that I also probably should have mentioned earlier is you all need to be on the same foundation together. Having a strong faith helped us through the tough times to be able to, and to be on the same faith and on the same page with the same foundation together helped us to get through the tough times together. Mm-hmm. So I definitely encourage that you figure out how to also make sure that we mentioned physical fitness, but also that you're spiritually and mentally tough and fit as well.
Okay.
And also, like, homesteading doesn't always look like all these flowy pictures on Instagram and everything, and all the women in, you know, linen dresses and their aprons, and they're doing all these things and making all the sourdough and only eating this and only eating that. Because like when you were talking about when we ate all this organic food, and then we were at a place where we couldn't afford organic food or much food anyway, that really, I don't know, it just shook me, I guess. And so now, just do what you can do. You don't have to look a certain way. You don't have to eat everything perfect. You don't have to make everything from scratch. Just do what you can do. Because I used to make all of our own bread and all of our own sauces and all it. And then kids come along and I can't do all of that. So just right. know that just do what you can do. And that's good enough.
I would also add, stop and smell the roses and celebrate the victories. Yeah. A lot of times we're always looking at that other side of the fence. The grass is always greener, and that fence sometimes tends to be moving to where you're never content, never thankful for where you are and what you've achieved. Sometimes we just need to stop, look back and say, wow, and be thankful for what you've done, what you've been blessed to do, what you've been blessed to have. Because we can constantly be in this discontent state where we're never happy. And that's another thing I'll add to that. Because I noticed far too often in this homestead community, especially even online, I don't know if how much it applies to those who aren't online, but sometimes homesteaders, preppers, they live in this state of just fear and too serious.
Yeah.
This is the way of life should be fun. We should be smiling. We should be some of the most happiest people on earth. And sometimes I ask when I see some videos, I'm like, why are they not happy? They're never happy. We should be happy. We should be joyful.
That's one of the things I enjoy about watching your YouTube channel is that you guys laugh a lot.
Yeah.
I enjoy that.
It's really important, especially if you're a believer. There's hope that's been instilled in us. We should be some of the most joyful people on earth. Whatever's going on out there in the world, we should still have joy within us.
And be of good courage.
Exactly. We should
not be fearful of things.
Yes.
So. Yeah. Well, those are all wonderful words of encouragement. And I want to thank you guys for being on. And I'm going to end this how I always do and encourage people to grow where they're planted.